She heard everything she was never meant to hear. She heard the Duke call her adequate. She heard him dismiss their intimacy as a mistake. And when his mistress mocked her openly, his silence cut deeper than any blade. While the estate slept in darkness, she fled, taking nothing that bore his name. No jewels, no title, no explanation. Just herself, and the secret growing inside her. By dawn, the Duchess was gone. The Duke woke to empty chambers and the slow, terrible realization of what he had lost. He searched for 3 months, believing she had simply vanished into nothing. He did not know about the child. Far from the cold marble halls of Westwood, she built a new life in a quiet village, learned that she was stronger than she ever imagined, that survival required no grand estate or glittering title, and only determination, until the night everything changed, until the night he found her, and discovered a truth that would bring him to his knees. Before we begin, quick question. How are you feeling right now? Thank you so much for being here. It really means the world to me. I'm working toward 1,000 subscribers, and if Lydia's story is already pulling at your heart, please hit that subscribe button, tap the like, and drop a comment telling me where you're watching from. It helps more than you know. All right, thank you. Now let's get back to what happens when the Duchess they discarded becomes the woman the Duke can't live without. The carriage came to a stop before gates that seemed to reach toward the sky itself. Lydia Maxwell pressed her gloved hand against the window, her breath fogging the glass as she stared at Westwood Estate. Towers of grey stone pierced through morning mist, gardens stretched in perfect geometric patterns, fountains caught the light like scattered diamonds. Beautiful. Cold. Empty. Everything her future would be. She was 22 years old, and her life had already been decided for her. The Maxwell name, once proud and powerful, had crumbled under her father's debts and poor investments. Whispers had followed their family through every ballroom, every gathering, every quiet corner where society gathered to feast on scandal, until Duke Wesley Chandler made his offer. Not for love, not even for affection, for alliance, for stability, for the restoration of fractured political connections between their families. Lydia had agreed without hesitation, not because she wanted to, but because refusal would have destroyed what remained of her family completely. Her mother's tears, her father's shame, her younger sister's future, all of it rested on her shoulders now. The carriage door opened. A footman in pristine livery extended his hand. Lydia took it, stepping down onto gravel that crunched beneath her shoes like broken promises. The estate loomed before her. Servants lined the entrance, their expressions carefully neutral. She could feel their eyes tracking her every movement, measuring her against some invisible standard she would never quite reach. The head butler, a man named Gerald with silver hair and a face carved from stone, bowed precisely. "Your Grace, welcome to Westwood Estate." "Your Grace," the title felt foreign, borrowed, like wearing someone else's skin. "Thank you," Lydia said quietly, her voice steady despite the trembling in her chest. She climbed the wide stone steps, her wedding gown trailing behind her like a ghost. The ceremony had been held 3 hours prior in the chapel at her family's estate. Small, private, efficient. Westley had stood beside her, tall and impossibly distant, his dark eyes never quite meeting hers. He had spoken his vows in a voice that carried no warmth, no emotion, nothing but duty fulfilled. When the priest declared them husband and wife, Westley had turned to her, placed one brief, cold kiss against her forehead, then walked away. Lydia entered Westwood Estate alone. The entrance hall stretched before her like a cathedral. Marble floors gleamed beneath crystal chandeliers that hung like frozen starlight. Portraits lined the walls, with generations of Chandler ancestors staring down with expressions ranging from stern to severe. None of them smiled. "The Duke has requested you be shown to your chambers," Gerald said, his tone perfectly professional. "He has business matters to attend to this afternoon." Of course he did. Lydia followed a maid named Mabel up a grand staircase that curved like a swan's neck. The girl was young, perhaps 16, with dark hair tucked beneath a white cap and eyes that darted nervously. "Your chambers are in the east wing, Your Grace," Mabel said softly. "The Duke's chambers are in the west. Opposite sides of the estate, separate, distant, alone. The chambers were beautiful in the way museums were beautiful. Untouched, perfect, lifeless. A massive four-poster bed dominated the center, draped in silk the color of morning fog. And windows overlooked gardens that stretched toward distant woods. A vanity, a wardrobe, a sitting area with chairs arranged before a fireplace that held no fire. Everything in its place. Nothing out of order. Lydia stood in the center of the room, feeling smaller than she had ever felt in her life. "Will you require anything, Your Grace?" Mabel asked. "No, thank you." The door closed with a soft click. Silence pressed in from all sides. Lydia moved to the window, her fingers trailing along the cool glass. Below, she could see gardeners working among the flowers, their movements slow and methodical. Beyond them, the woods stood dark and distant. She did not cry. Crying required hope that something better might have been possible. Dinner that evening was served in a dining room large enough to host 50 guests. The table stretched between them like an ocean. Westley sat at one end, Lydia at the other. Candles flickered between them, casting shadows that danced across his face. He was handsome in the way sharp things were handsome. All clean lines and controlled angles. Dark hair swept back from a face that revealed nothing. Eyes the color of winter storms, cold and distant and impossibly removed. He ate in silence. She did the same. Servants moved like ghosts, placing courses before them, removing plates, refilling wine glasses. Not a single sound disturbed the quiet, except the soft clink of silver against porcelain. Lydia searched for something to say. Some thread of conversation that might bridge the distance between them. "The estate is beautiful," she offered quietly. "Yes." His voice was deep, controlled, revealing nothing. "How long have you lived here?" "Since birth." "It must hold many memories." "It holds what is necessary." The conversation died like a candle flame caught in wind. They finished the meal in silence. When the final course was cleared, Westley stood, buttoning his jacket with precise movements. "I have correspondence to attend to," he said, his gaze somewhere past her shoulder. "Good evening, Duchess." He left without waiting for her response. Lydia sat alone at the long table, surrounded by empty chairs and dying candlelight. The days that followed blurred together into a rhythm that felt less like marriage and more like cohabitation between strangers. Lydia woke alone, breakfasted alone, spent her days exploring the estate, learning its corridors and gardens, memorizing the faces of servants who bowed but never quite met her eyes. No Westley appeared at scheduled intervals. Dinner. Occasional afternoon tea when guests visited. Morning walks through the gardens when society required them to be seen together. But he never looked at her. Not really. His gaze would slide past her face, settling on something just beyond her shoulder, as if looking directly at her might require something he was unwilling to give. She became a ghost in her own life. Present but unseen. Acknowledged but never noticed. It was during one of these formal afternoon teas that Lydia first truly encountered Gabriella Bullock, the woman arrived in a swirl of emerald silk and calculated confidence, tall, elegant, with hair the color of polished mahogany and eyes that assessed everything with the precision of a jeweler examining stones. She swept into the drawing room as if she owned it, a smile bright and sharp as a blade. "Westley, darling," she said, her voice carrying that particular aristocratic lilt that suggested centuries of breeding. "I hope I'm not interrupting." Westley stood, something shifting in his posture. Not warmth, precisely, but a relaxation of the rigid control he maintained around Lydia. "Gabriella, not at all. Please join us." Us, as if Lydia had been part of this tableau all along. Gabriella settled into the chair beside Westley's, close enough that her skirts brushed his leg. She glanced at Lydia with eyes that catalogued and dismissed in the same breath. "You must be the new Duchess," Gabriella said, her smile never quite reaching her eyes. "How lovely. I've heard such interesting things about the Maxwell situation." Situation. Not family. Not history. Situation. "Gabriella is a dear friend of the family," Westley said, his tone warmer than Lydia had ever heard it directed at her. "She's been a fixture at Westwood for years." "How fortunate," Lydia said quietly, her hands folded in her lap. Gabriella laughed, the sound like bells wrapped in silk. "Oh, Westley and I go back quite far, don't we? I practically grew up in these halls." She reached out, her fingers brushing Westley's sleeve with casual familiarity. He did not pull away. Lydia watched the exchange with growing understanding, the ease between them, the unspoken communication, the way Gabriella occupied space beside Westley that felt claimed, possessed, owned. This was not friendship. This was territory. And Lydia had just been informed exactly where she stood. T continued with Gabriella leading the conversation, her laughter filling spaces that Lydia's presence never could. She spoke of shared memories, private jokes, people and places that Lydia would never be part of. Westley responded with something close to animation. His replies grew longer, his posture relaxed further. Once, almost imperceptibly, he smiled. At Gabriella. Never at her. When the tea concluded and Gabriella finally departed, pressing a kiss to Westley's cheek that lingered just slightly too long, Lydia remained seated in the drawing room. Westley stood to leave. "She seems quite familiar with the estate," Lydia said softly. Westley paused at the door, his back to her. "Gabriella has been a friend for many years. Her family and mine have long-standing connections." "I see. Do you require anything else, Duchess?" The title. Always the title. Never her name. "No." He left. Lydia sat in the drawing room as afternoon light slanted through tall windows, painting everything in shades of gold that felt like mockery. She thought about the way Gabriella had touched Westley's sleeve, the way his shoulders had softened in her presence, the way he had smiled. She thought about the vast, empty chambers in the east wing where she slept alone each night. She thought about the distance between them that seemed to grow wider with each passing day. And she understood, with perfect clarity, exactly what her marriage was. A transaction? An arrangement? A political necessity dressed in silk and sealed with vows that meant nothing beyond their legal binding. Westley had not married her because he wanted a wife. He had married her because he needed a solution. And Gabriella Bullock, with her knowing smiles and casual touches, had occupied the space that should have been Lydia's. That evening, Lydia stood in her chambers as Mabel helped her undress. The girl's hands were gentle, her movements practiced. "How long has Lady Gabriella been visiting the estate?" Lydia asked quietly. Mabel's hands faltered for just a moment. Many years, Your Grace. She's very close with the Duke. I see. Mabel said nothing more, but the silence spoke volumes. Lydia dismissed the girl and stood before the tall windows, watching darkness settle over the estate like a blanket. Lights flickered in the windows across the gardens, the West Wing, where Westley resided, where he chose to remain, far from her. She pressed her hand against the glass, feeling its coolness seep through her skin. She had entered this marriage with no illusions of love, but somewhere, in some small, a foolish corner of her heart, she had harbored a fragile hope that perhaps, with time, they might build something real. That hope felt dangerous now. Lydia turned from the window, extinguishing the lamps one by one until her chambers fell into darkness. She climbed into the massive bed, pulling silk sheets up to her chin, and stared at the ceiling high above. Her marriage existed only in rooms where others were watching. Everywhere else, she was alone. 3 months passed like water through cupped hands, slow, steady, impossible to hold. Lydia learned to navigate Westwood Estate the way sailors learned to navigate by stars, by markers and patterns, by the careful observation of rhythms that never changed. Gerald appeared each morning at precisely 8 o'clock to inquire about her needs. The breakfast was served in the small dining room at 15:15. Westley never attended. His mornings were dedicated to estate business, meetings with stewards and tenants, correspondence that required his attention. Lydia took her meals alone. She spent her mornings in the library, a vast room lined floor to ceiling with leather-bound volumes that smelled of paper and time. She read voraciously, novels, histories, poetry, anything to fill the hours that stretched before her like empty roads. Afternoons were reserved for walks through the gardens or needlework in the drawing room. Sometimes Clara Lambert, the estate physician's wife, would visit for tea. She was kind in a distant way, offering polite conversation that never quite crossed into genuine friendship. "You're settling in well," Clara said one afternoon, at her teacup balanced delicately in pale hands. "The estate is beautiful," Lydia replied, the words automatic now. "And the Duke? He treats you well?" Lydia smiled, the expression carefully constructed. "He is very proper." Proper. The word that meant everything and nothing at once. Clara's eyes held sympathy, but she said nothing more. Evenings brought the only guaranteed interaction with Westley. Dinner at 7, seated at opposite ends of that impossible table. They ate in practiced silence, speaking only when absolutely necessary. "The weather is turning colder," Lydia might offer. "Yes, winter approaches. Will there be a harvest celebration?" "As tradition requires. I should like to help with the preparations. Gerald will coordinate with you." And that was the extent of their communication. Brief exchanges that fulfilled obligation without creating connection. After dinner, Westley would retire to his study. Lydia would return to her chambers. They existed in the same house, under the same roof, separated by corridors that might as well have been continents. Gabriella visited frequently, sometimes announced, sometimes appearing as if the estate were as much hers as Westley's. She swept through rooms with practiced ease, her laughter echoing off marble and stone. Lydia would find them together in unexpected moments, standing close in the gallery, examining paintings, seated beside each other in the music room, Gabriella's fingers dancing across piano keys, while Westley listened with something almost like contentment on his face. Always together, always comfortable, always excluding her without saying a word. "Oh, to Lydia?" Gabriella said one afternoon, her tone bright with false surprise. "I didn't realize you were here. Westley and I were just discussing the upcoming charity gala." Lydia stood in the doorway of the drawing room, feeling like an intruder in her own home. I wasn't aware there was a gala being planned. Didn't Westley mention it? Gabriella's eyes gleamed with satisfaction. It's an annual tradition. I've been helping him organize it for years. Westley stood near the window, his expression neutral. Gabriella has considerable experience with such events. Of course, Lydia said quietly. I wouldn't want to interfere. She turned to leave, but Gabriella's voice followed her. You're welcome to attend, naturally. As the Duchess, your presence is required. Required. Not welcomed. Not desired. Required. Lydia continued walking. Her steps measured and controlled until she reached the gardens. Only then did she allow herself to breathe fully, her hands clenching into fists at her sides. She wanted to scream, to rage, to demand acknowledgement, respect, something more than this polite neglect. But what would be the point? Westley had not promised her love. He had not promised her happiness. He had promised her the title of Duchess, and that title was exactly what she had received. Nothing more. Nothing less. The days grew shorter as autumn deepened. Leaves turned gold and crimson, falling in graceful spirals to carpet the gardens. Lydia watched them from her window, feeling something inside her, dying just as quietly. She began to notice Westley in ways she hadn't before. The way his jaw tightened when reviewing difficult correspondence, the way his fingers drummed against his desk when he was thinking, the way he moved through rooms with unconscious grace, his presence commanding without effort. He was beautiful in that cold, untouchable way, like sculpture carved from marble. Perfect, but lifeless. And she was beginning to want him. Not the distant Duke, who barely acknowledged her existence, but the man beneath. The one who smiled at Gabriella. The one capable of warmth, however carefully he guarded it. She wanted that warmth turned toward her. The realization settled in her chest like stones. Wanting him was dangerous. Wanting him gave him power to hurt her in ways that duty and arrangement never could. She tried to stop, tried to maintain the careful distance he had established between them, but proximity bred familiarity, and familiarity bred longing. She found herself watching for him, listening for his footsteps in the corridor, choosing gowns in colors she thought might please him, arranging her hair in styles that might catch his attention. Nothing worked. He remained as distant as ever, his eyes sliding past her as if she were furniture, functional but unremarkable. One evening, Lydia descended for dinner wearing a gown of deep sapphire that brought out the blue in her eyes. She had spent an hour with Mabel, perfecting her appearance. Westley glanced up when she entered. His gaze swept over her once, clinical and assessing. Good evening, Duchess, he said, returning his attention to the documents beside his plate. That was all. Lydia took her seat at the far end of the table, something crumbling inside her chest. She was starving. Not for food, but for recognition, but for acknowledgement. For the simple human connection of being seen by the man who had sworn vows to her. The harvest preparations are proceeding well, she said, desperate to fill the silence. Gerald says the yields will be exceptional this year. Good. I thought perhaps we might attend the village celebration together. As Duke and Duchess. Westley's hand paused over his plate. I have commitments that evening. What commitments? His eyes lifted to hers, cool and measuring. Business matters? On harvest night? When tradition dictates the Duke's presence? Something flickered across his face. Annoyance, perhaps. Or simply, impatience. Gabriella and I have an engagement that cannot be rescheduled. Gabriella and I. The words hung in the air between them, sharp as broken glass. I see, Lydia said quietly. You're welcome to attend in my stead. Gerald will accompany you. Welcome to represent him. Welcome to fulfill the duties he found inconvenient. Welcome to be the Duchess in all the ways that mattered least. Lydia set down her fork, her appetite gone entirely. They finished the meal in silence. When Wesley rose to leave, Lydia remained seated. "Do you regret it?" she asked softly. He paused, his back to her. "Regret what?" "Marrying me." The silence stretched between them, thick and suffocating. When he finally spoke, his voice was carefully neutral. "Our marriage serves its purpose. Purpose. Not happiness. Not companionship. Purpose." He left without another word. Lydia sat alone in the dining room as candles burned low and shadows lengthened across empty chairs. Tears pricked at her eyes, but she refused to let them fall. She had been a fool to hope. Hope was a luxury women in her position could not afford. That night, lying in her vast empty bed, Lydia made a decision. She would stop wanting. Stop hoping. Stop reaching for something that would never be offered. She would be exactly what Wesley required, a proper duchess, a suitable figurehead, a convenient arrangement. Nothing more. It was easier not to hope. Safer. She closed her eyes and willed herself to believe it. But in the darkness, she could still hear Gabriella's laughter echoing through the halls, could still see the way Wesley's shoulders softened in her presence, could still feel the weight of his indifference pressing against her chest like a physical thing. She was the Duchess of Westwood, and she had never been more alone in her life. The weeks that followed passed in careful numbness. Lydia perfected the art of existing without feeling. She smiled when required, spoke when necessary, fulfilled her duties with mechanical precision. The servants began to pity her. She could see it in their eyes, the way Mabel's hands lingered gently when helping her dress, the way Gerald's voice softened when addressing her, the way Clara Lambert's visits grew more frequent, her conversation more careful. They all knew. Everyone knew. The Duchess was ornamental, decorative, necessary but not wanted. And somewhere in the West Wing, in chambers Lydia had never entered, the Duke lived a life that did not include her. Gabriella's presence became as constant as the furniture. She was there at breakfast when Lydia ventured down early, there at afternoon tea, there at dinner parties, seated at Wesley's right hand, while Lydia occupied the left, but always there, always between them, always reminding Lydia exactly where she stood. One afternoon, Lydia encountered them in the portrait gallery. They stood before a painting of a young woman with sad eyes and a crown of flowers. "Your mother," Gabriella was saying softly, her hand resting on Wesley's arm. "She had such grace." "She did," Wesley replied, his voice carrying a warmth Lydia had never heard directed at her. Lydia's footsteps echoed on marble. They both turned. Gabriella's smile sharpened. "Duchess, how lovely. We were just admiring the family portraits." "So I see." Wesley's expression closed immediately, all warmth evaporating, as if it had never existed. "Did you require something?" "I was merely passing through." "Of course." He turned back to the portrait, effectively dismissing her. Gabriella's smile widened. Lydia continued walking, her spine straight and her face carefully composed. Only when she reached the safety of her chambers did she allow her facade to crack. She leaned against the door, breathing shakily. How long could she endure this? This slow, quiet erasure of herself? She crossed to the window, staring out at gardens growing bare as winter approached. Frost touched everything now, turning beauty brittle, much like her marriage. That night, as she prepared for bed, Mabel hesitated at the door. "Your Grace, Forgive me, but are you well? Lydia turned from the mirror, meeting the girl's concerned eyes. I'm perfectly fine. It's just, you seem... Yes? Mabel swallowed, clearly struggling with propriety versus compassion. Sad, Your Grace. You seem very sad. The simple honesty of it cracked something inside Lydia's chest. I thank you for your concern, Mabel. But I assure you, I'm well. The girl curtsied and left, her eyes troubled. Lydia stood alone in her chamber, surrounded by silk and luxury and aching loneliness. She was not well. She was drowning, and no one was coming to save her. The storm arrived without warning. Lydia stood at her chamber window, watching clouds gather like bruises across the sky. Wind bent the trees in the gardens, stripping the last leaves from their branches. Thunder rumbled in the distance, a deep sound that vibrated through stone and bone. She had dismissed Mabel early, wanting solitude. Dinner had been another silent affair. Westley had barely glanced at her before retreating to his study with documents that apparently required immediate attention. Always documents, always business, always anything but her. But rain began to fall, gentle at first, then harder. It lashed against the windows, turning the world beyond into a blur of darkness and water. Lightning flickered, painting her chambers in stark white light that vanished as quickly as it came. Lydia wrapped her silk robe tighter around herself. She had already prepared for bed, her hair falling loose around her shoulders, her feet bare against cold floor. The storm intensified. Thunder cracked so loud it shook the windows. The lights flickered once, twice, then steadied. She should sleep. Morning would come regardless of whether she rested. But something kept her at the window, watching the storm rage against the estate. The door to her chamber opened. Lydia turned, expecting Mabel returning with some forgotten item. Westley stood in the doorway. His dark hair was disheveled, as if he had been running his hands through it repeatedly. His jacket was gone, his white shirt partially unbuttoned. Rain glistened on his shoulders, soaked through the fabric. He looked wild, undone, barely controlled. Westley, her voice came out uncertain. He had never entered her chambers. Not once in 3 months of marriage. He stared at her, his chest rising and falling with uneven breaths. His eyes, usually so cold and controlled, burned with something she could not name. I shouldn't be here, he said, his voice rough. Then why are you? Thunder crashed. The lights flickered again. Westley stepped inside, closing the door behind him. The click of the latch sounded impossibly loud. I don't know, he said, and for the first time since she had met him, he sounded uncertain. Lost. Lydia's heart hammered against her ribs, and she was acutely aware of her state of undress, the thin silk of her nightgown and robe, her bare feet, her loose hair. His eyes traveled over her, not clinical now, but hungry, desperate. You've been avoiding me for months, she said quietly. What changed tonight? Everything. Nothing. He moved closer, his movements restrained but purposeful. I've been trying not to notice you. Why? Because noticing you would complicate everything. We're married, Westley. How much more complicated could it be? He laughed, the sound harsh and bitter. You don't understand. Then explain it to me. Another step closer. He was near enough now that she could see water droplets clinging to his hair, could smell rain and something darker, something that was purely him. I think about you, he said, his voice dropping lower. More than I should. More than is safe. Safe? I see you in the gardens, reading in the library, sitting at that damned table night after night, trying to make conversation while I act like you don't exist. His jaw tightened. And I want... What do you want? The words came out barely above a whisper. Westley's control shattered like glass. He closed the distance between them in two strides, his hands cupping her face with a gentleness that contradicted the desperation in his eyes. "This," he breathed. "I want this." His mouth crashed against hers. Lydia gasped, shock and desire flooding through her in equal measure. His lips moved against hers with barely restrained hunger, claiming, demanding. His hands slid into her hair, tilting her head back to deepen the kiss. She should push him away, should demand answers, should protect herself from whatever this was. Instead, she kissed him back. Her hands found his chest, feeling the rapid beat of his heart through wet fabric. He was trembling. This controlled, distant man was trembling against her. Westley broke the kiss, his forehead resting against hers, his breath coming in ragged gasps. "I've been denying myself," he whispered, "denying both of us." "Why?" "Because wanting you felt like weakness. Because I told myself this marriage was duty, nothing more. Because I've been a fool." His hands moved to her waist, pulling her closer. She could feel the heat of him through thin silk, could feel every hard plane of his body pressing against hers. "Lydia," he said, her name falling from his lips like a prayer. "If you want me to leave, tell me now. Because if I stay..." "Stay," the word escaped before she could think better of it. But she meant it. God help her, she meant it. Something shifted in his eyes, restraint giving way to raw need. His mouth found hers again, slower this time, deeper. His tongue traced the seam of her lips until she opened for him, and the kiss turned molten, consuming. Lydia's fingers fumbled with the buttons of his shirt, desperate to touch skin. He helped her, shrugging out of the wet fabric and tossing it aside. Her hands explored the planes of his chest, feeling muscle and heat and the rapid flutter of his pulse. "You're so beautiful," he murmured against her throat, his lips trailing fire down her neck. "Do you know how many nights I've lain awake, knowing you were here, wanting..." "Show me." His hands found the tie of her robe, pulling it loose. The silk slipped from her shoulders, pooling at her feet. Only her nightgown remained, thin enough to be nearly transparent in the lamplight. Westley's gaze traveled over her, reverent and desperate and wondrous. "I don't deserve you," he whispered. "Then earn me." Something broke in him at those words. He lifted her into his arms, carrying her to the massive bed. He laid her down against silk sheets with a gentleness that made her chest ache, then followed her down, his body covering hers. His mouth found hers again as his hands began exploring. Slowly at first, then with growing confidence, he traced the curve of her waist, the swell of her hip, the softness of her thigh. Lydia arched against him, her body responding to touches she had only dreamed of. His name fell from her lips like a plea. "Tell me what you want," he breathed against her ear. "You, all of you." His hand slid beneath her nightgown, pushing the fabric up and away. Cool air touched her skin, but his touch burned hotter. He worshipped every inch of her with hands and mouth, learning her like a language he had been desperate to speak. When he finally settled between her thighs, his eyes met hers, dark and intense. "Are you certain?" "Yes." He entered her slowly, carefully, watching her face for any sign of discomfort. There was pain at first, sharp and bright, but it faded quickly into something deeper. "Fuller." "Right." They moved together, finding a rhythm that felt ancient and new all at once. His name became a mantra on her lips. Her fingers dug into his shoulders as pleasure built higher and higher. Westley's control frayed completely. His movements grew more urgent, more desperate. He buried his face against her neck, breathing her name like a confession. Lydia. God, Lydia. She shattered first, pleasure crashing over her in waves that left her gasping. He followed moments later, his body going rigid as he found his own release. For long moments, they lay tangled together, breath ragged and hearts racing. Finally, Westley shifted, pulling her against his chest. His fingers traced lazy patterns along her spine. I've been so stupid, he whispered into her hair. Pushing you away when all I wanted was this. Why did you? He was quiet for a moment, his hand stilling. Because admitting I wanted you meant admitting I needed you. And needing someone gives them power to hurt you. I would never. I know that now. He pressed a kiss to her forehead, tender and achingly sweet. I'm sorry, he continued, for the coldness, the distance, making you feel unwanted when the truth is I wanted you so badly it terrified me. Lydia tilted her head to look up at him. In the dim light, his face was softer than she had ever seen it, vulnerable. What happens tomorrow? She asked quietly. Tomorrow we begin again, properly this time, as husband and wife in truth, not just title. Hope flickered to life in her chest, fragile but bright. Promise me, she whispered. I promise. He kissed her again, slow and deep and full of unspoken vows. Outside, the storm raged on, but inside, wrapped in Westley's arms, Lydia felt safe for the first time since arriving at Westwood Estate. She fell asleep to the rhythm of his heartbeat, his arms secure around her. For one perfect night, she was not an obligation. She was wanted. She was chosen. She was his. Lydia woke to cold sheets and pale morning light filtering through curtains she did not remember closing. She sat up slowly, the silk sliding down her bare skin. Her body ached in new places, a reminder of the night before, of Westley's hands and mouth and whispered promises. Westley. She looked to the space beside her, expecting to find him still sleeping. The bed was empty. No indent in the pillow. No warmth lingering in the sheets, as if he had been careful not to leave a trace. Lydia's chest tightened. Perhaps he had simply woken early. Perhaps he had estate matters requiring his attention. Perhaps. She saw the note on the pillow beside her. Her hand trembled slightly as she reached for it, unfolding cream paper embossed with the Chandler seal. Duchess, my business requires my attention in town. I will return this evening. That was all. No endearments. No reference to what had passed between them, no acknowledgement that everything had changed. Just duty. Just business. Just distance, re-established with a few brief words. Lydia stared at the note until the letters blurred. What had she expected? Declarations of love? Promises of devotion? She had known better than to hope. But somewhere between his desperate kisses and whispered confessions, hope had taken root anyway. Foolish girl. Mabel arrived shortly after, her expression carefully neutral as she helped Lydia dress. If the girl noticed anything different about her mistress, she said nothing. Will you be taking breakfast in the dining room, Your Grace? No, here is fine. Alone was safer. The day passed in strange suspension. Lydia tried to read but could not focus, tried to walk in the gardens but found no peace, tried to occupy herself with needlework but pricked her fingers 3 times in as many minutes. Everything felt different. She felt different, more aware of her body, of the phantom touch of his hands, of the memory of his weight pressing her into silk sheets. But more than that, she felt exposed. Vulnerable, as if she had given him something precious and was now waiting to see what he would do with it. Dinner approached, Westley should return. Lydia changed into an evening gown of soft rose, taking care with her appearance. She wanted to look beautiful for him, wanted to see recognition in his eyes when he looked at her, wanted confirmation that last night had meant something. She descended to the dining room at precisely 7 o'clock. Westley was already seated, documents spread before him, his attention focused entirely on whatever business occupied his mind. He glanced up when she entered. "Good evening, Duchess." The formal address hit her like a slap. "Good evening," she managed, her voice steady despite the sinking feeling in her chest. She took her seat at the far end of the table. Servants appeared with the first course. Westley returned his attention to his papers. The silence stretched between them, familiar and suffocating. "How was your business in town?" Lydia asked quietly. "Productive." "I'm glad." More silence. She searched for some acknowledgement, some sign that he remembered holding her, kissing her, promising her everything would be different. Nothing. He ate methodically, his gaze never quite meeting hers. "Westley." "Yes." The word was polite, his distant, the same tone he had used for 3 months before last night. Lydia's courage faltered. "Never mind." Dinner concluded in that terrible, familiar quiet. When the final course was cleared, Westley stood, gathering his documents. "I have correspondence to attend to. Good evening, Duchess." He left without looking back. Lydia sat alone at the long table, staring at the empty chair where he had been. What had changed? Everything. Nothing. She returned to her chambers feeling hollowed out. Mabel helped her undress, her movements gentle. "Will that be all, Your Grace?" "Yes, thank you." The door closed. Silence pressed in. Lydia stood before the mirror, studying her reflection. She looked the same. But inside, something had shifted. Something that could not be shifted back. She touched her stomach, a gesture unconscious and tender. What if last night had consequences? What if there was a child? The thought should terrify her. Instead, it filled her with strange, fierce longing. A child would be real, tangible. Something that could not be dismissed or ignored. A child would matter. Days passed, then a week, then two. Westley returned to his pattern of polite distance. Dinners were silent. He never came to her chambers, never referenced that storm-filled night. It was as if it had never happened, except Lydia's body knew differently. She began noticing changes. Small at first, a tenderness in her breasts, a slight queasiness in the mornings, a exhaustion that no amount of sleep could cure. She told herself it was stress, anxiety, the weight of living in this beautiful prison. But deep down, she knew. Clara Lambert confirmed it 3 weeks later. The physician's wife had been visiting for tea when Lydia excused herself suddenly, overcome by nausea. Clara followed her, concern etched across her features. "How long?" Clara asked gently, after Lydia had composed herself. "I don't know what you mean." "Lydia." Clara's voice was kind. "I've birthed enough children to recognize the signs. How long have you been feeling unwell?" Lydia's hands trembled. "A few weeks." "And your courses?" "Late." Clara's expression softened. "You're with child." The words hung in the air between them, transforming possibility into certainty. Lydia sank into a chair, her hands moving to her stomach. "Are you sure?" "As sure as I can be, without more time passing. But all the signs are there." Clara knelt beside her. "Does the Duke know?" "No. You should tell him." Should she? Or tell him that the night he had tried so desperately to forget had created a life. Tell him that his moment of weakness had permanent consequences. Tell him that she was carrying his heir. I will, Lydia said quietly. When the time is right. But as days turned into another week, she could not find the courage. Wesley remained distant. Gabriella's visits continued. Nothing changed, except everything had changed. Lydia was pregnant with the child of a man who could barely stand to look at her, who had given her one night of tenderness and then retreated so completely it was as if he had never touched her at all. She stood at her window one evening, watching darkness claim the gardens, her hand resting on her still flat stomach. I will protect you, she whispered. Whatever happens, I will keep you safe. Because that was what mothers did. Even when their hearts were breaking, she had to tell Wesley, had to give him the opportunity to acknowledge this child, to step forward as a father, if not as a husband. Tomorrow, she decided, tomorrow she would find the courage, but tomorrow would bring something else entirely. Something that would shatter the fragile hope she had been clinging to. Something that would change everything. Midnight found Lydia walking the corridors of Westwood Estate, sleepless and restless. Her hand rested protectively over her stomach, where a life no bigger than a seed was growing. She needed to tell Wesley. Tonight, before fear stole her courage again, his study would still be lit. He often worked late into the night, as if avoiding sleep entirely, or avoiding his own chambers, avoiding any space where he might encounter her. Lydia moved through shadows cast by distant lamps, her bare feet silent on marble floors. She wore only her nightgown and robe, her hair loose around her shoulders, not proper, not appropriate. But nothing about this situation was proper anymore. She turned the corner toward Wesley's private study, rehearsing words in her mind. I need to speak with you. It's important. I'm carrying your child. No. Too abrupt. Wesley. That night during the storm. It had consequences. No. Too clinical. I'm pregnant. Simple. Direct. True. She would tell him simply and watch his face. See if any warmth remained beneath that controlled exterior. See if their child might matter where she had not. Lydia approached the heavy oak door of his study. Light spilled from beneath it. Voices drifted through, low, but intimate. She recognized Gabriella's laugh immediately, that particular musical sound that seemed designed to charm. Lydia's hand froze on the door handle. She should not eavesdrop. Should not listen to private conversation. But something held her there, some instinct that whispered, listen. You seem distracted tonight, darling, Gabriella's voice, warm and teasing. I have much on my mind. Wesley's reply, carrying that softness he reserved only for Gabriella. The Duchess? Silence, heavy and telling. Gabriella laughed again, softer this time. Oh, Wesley. You needn't look so guilty. We both know what this marriage is. Do we? A convenience. A necessity. Your duty to your family name. Fabric rustled, as if she was moving closer to him. But she's hardly what you wanted, is she? More silence. Lydia's hand fell away from the door, her breath caught painfully in her chest. She's... Wesley's voice, measured and careful. Adequate. Adequate. The word struck like a blade. Adequate, Gabriella repeated, amusement coloring the word. How romantic. I imagine the poor thing thinks that night you spent with her meant something. Lydia went very still. That was... Wesley paused. A mistake. A mistake. Was it? Gabriella's tone turned knowing. Or was it simply biological necessity? You needed an heir. She was convenient. Gabriella, don't look so troubled, darling. We both know where your heart truly lies. The Maxwell girl is decorative enough, properly bred. She'll give you children and stay out of the way. What more could you ask from a wife you never wanted? She deserves better than what? A duke's title? At wealth? Position? Gabriella's voice hardened slightly. She should be grateful. Her family was drowning in debt and scandal. You rescued her from a far worse fate. Silence again. Lydia pressed her hand against the wall, needing support. Tell her she's wrong, she willed him. Defend me. Tell her I matter. You're not wrong, Westley said finally, his voice quiet. Something inside Lydia cracked. Of course I'm not, Gabriella sounded satisfied. Now, about the winter ball. I thought we might. Actually, I've been meaning to discuss something with you. Oh? This arrangement between us. It's becoming complicated. Because of the Duchess? Gabriella's laugh was sharp now. Westley, she's your wife in name only. Everyone knows that. What we have is far more real than whatever legal fiction binds you to her. Is it? Don't tell me one night of obligation has made you sentimental. Another pause. Longer this time. No, Westley said finally. You're right, she's an arrangement. Nothing more. The words fell like stones into still water, sending ripples through Lydia's entire world. An arrangement. Nothing more. I knew you'd see reason, Gabriella purred. Now come here. You're far too tense. Sounds of movement. A soft sigh. Intimate, familiar sounds that made Lydia's stomach turn. She stepped back from the door, her hand covering her mouth to stifle any sound that might escape. She had heard enough. More than enough. Everything she needed to know about her place in Westley's life had just been spelled out with perfect clarity. That night during the storm? Not a mistake. Biological necessity. Nothing more than duty performed in a moment of weakness. And her? Adequate. Convenient. A solution to a problem. Never chosen. Never wanted. Never real. Lydia turned and walked away from the study, her steps careful and controlled, despite the chaos building inside her chest. She moved through corridors like a ghost, feeling disconnected from her own body. She reached her chambers and closed the door with a soft click. For a long moment, she simply stood there, breathing. No tears came. She was beyond tears. This was something deeper than sadness, colder than grief. This was clarity. She had been lying to herself, clinging to hope built on nothing but wishful thinking, believing that one night of passion meant something when it had meant nothing at all. Lydia moved to the window, staring out at darkness broken by distant lights. Her hand rested on her stomach. A child. Their child. But Westley had called it biological necessity, had called that night a mistake. Would he feel the same about this baby? Would their child be simply another duty to fulfill? Another convenient arrangement? She could stay. Present herself tomorrow and announce the pregnancy. Watch Westley's face remain carefully neutral while he calculated political advantages. Watch Gabriella's smug satisfaction as Lydia's purpose became even more clearly defined. The incubator for an heir. Nothing more. Or, Lydia turned from the window, decision crystallizing with perfect clarity. She could leave. Simply remove herself from this beautiful prison. Protect herself and her child from a life of elegant neglect. Choose dignity over desperation. As she moved with sudden purpose, pulling a simple traveling dress from her wardrobe. Plain brown wool, nothing that screamed, Duchess. She dressed quickly, her fingers steady despite the pounding of her heart. No jewels, nothing that belonged to the Chandler family. Nothing that could be claimed as theft. She was taking only what had always been hers, herself, and the child growing inside her. Lydia penned no note. What would she say? Thank you for the clarity. I finally understand my place. No words were necessary. Her absence would speak louder than anything she could write. She gathered a small bag with essentials, a few coins she had saved from household allowances, her mother's pearl earrings, a wedding gift, one plain dress for changing. Nothing else. She took one last look at the chambers that had been her cage for 3 months, of the massive bed where Wesley had held her and made promises he never intended to keep. The windows overlooking gardens she would never walk again. She felt nothing. No regret. No sorrow. Only cold, absolute determination. Lydia slipped into the corridor. The estate slept around her. Servants retired, Wesley likely still in his study with Gabriella. She moved like smoke through halls she had memorized, avoiding the main entrance, heading instead toward the servants' passage that led to the kitchen gardens. No one saw her go. No one stopped her. She simply walked away from Westwood Estate as if she had never belonged there at all, because she hadn't. The night air was cold against her face. Frost crunched beneath her shoes. She walked steadily toward the main road, not looking back. Behind her, the estate rose against the night sky, all stone and shadows and false promises. Ahead, the road stretched into darkness, unknown, uncertain. But hers, Lydia Maxwell, no, she was not Maxwell anymore, and she would never be Chandler, walked into that darkness with her head high and her hand protective over the life growing inside her. She did not cry. She did not hesitate. She simply chose herself. And by the time dawn painted the sky in shades of pink and gold, the Duchess of Westwood was gone. She had taken nothing that belonged to Westley, except the future he did not know existed. Morning came with the same pale light it always did. Westley woke in his chambers, head aching from too little sleep and too much whiskey. The conversation with Gabriella the previous night had left him unsettled. Her words kept circling through his mind like carrion birds. "She's an arrangement." So nothing more. He had agreed, said what Gabriella expected to hear, maintained the facade he had built so carefully. But the words had tasted like ash. Westley rose and dressed mechanically, trying to shake the unease that clung to him like morning mist. He had estate business to attend to, tenants to meet, correspondence to answer. Routine would restore order. It always did. Breakfast was laid out in the small dining room. He took his usual seat, expecting solitude. Gerald appeared in the doorway, his expression troubled. "Your Grace, forgive the interruption." "What is it?" The Duchess did not appear for breakfast. Her maid went to wake her and found the chambers empty. Westley's hand paused over his coffee cup. "Empty?" "Yes, Your Grace. The bed appears slept in, but Her Grace is nowhere to be found. What we've searched the immediate areas, the library, the gardens, the drawing rooms. Perhaps she went for an early walk. In this cold, Your Grace, without informing anyone?" Gerald's voice carried careful concern. "That would be most unusual." "Unusual?" Something cold settled in Wesley's chest. "Have the ground searched," he said, rising from the table. "Check with the stable master. See if she took a horse." "At once, Your Grace." Wesley climbed the stairs to the east wing, taking them two at a time. Foolish to feel concerned. Lydia was probably reading somewhere, lost in a book, or perhaps avoiding him, as she had been doing more frequently. He reached her chambers and pushed open the door. The room was exactly as Gerald described. Bed slept in but abandoned, curtains still drawn, morning fire unlit. But something was wrong. De Westley moved through the space, his trained eye cataloguing details. The wardrobe stood slightly open. He pulled it wider, scanning the contents. Dresses hung in neat rows, but gaps existed where there had been none before. He pulled open drawers, undergarments, stockings. Some were missing, not many. just enough for travel. His chest tightened. He moved to the vanity. The jewelry box sat open. Most of the pieces remained. The Chandler family jewels he had gifted her upon their marriage. The diamond necklace, the sapphire earrings, the emerald bracelet. All there. Except her mother's pearls. The one piece that had been hers before the marriage. Wesley's hands clenched into fists. She had taken only what belonged to her. Which meant no. He moved to the writing desk, searching for a note, an explanation. Something to make sense of this. Nothing. No letter. No goodbye. No forwarding address. Just absence. Gerald appeared in the doorway, his face grave. Your Grace, the stablemaster reports no horses missing. The staff have searched the estate thoroughly. The Duchess is not on the grounds. When was she last seen? The night maid saw her retiring to her chambers around 11 o'clock. No one saw her after that. 11 o'clock, before midnight, before Gabriella had arrived at his study, before that conversation that now echoed in Wesley's mind with new, terrible significance. Get the carriage ready, Wesley said, his voice tight. I'm going to search the village. She can't have gone far on foot. Your Grace, Gerald hesitated. If I may. Should we not consider that Her Grace may have had the reasons for leaving? The careful phrasing did not disguise the implication. Wesley turned to look at the butler, something dangerous flashing in his eyes. What are you suggesting? Only that perhaps Her Grace felt unwelcome, unhappy. Gerald's voice remained steady despite Wesley's glare. I have served this family for 30 years, Your Grace. I know when a household is troubled. That will be all, Gerald. As you wish, Your Grace. The butler withdrew, leaving Wesley alone in Lydia's abandoned chambers. He sank into the chair before her vanity, staring at his reflection in the mirror. Behind him, the empty bed mocked him. The bed where he had held her, kissed her, promised her everything would be different, then promptly returned to treating her like furniture. A mistake, he had called it. Biological necessity. While she had been sleeping in this bed, believing his promises. God, what had he done? A knock at the door. A young maid, Mabel, stood there, her eyes red from crying. Your Grace, forgive me, but I think you should know something. Speak. Her Grace, she's been unwell for several weeks now. Morning sickness, I think, though she never said as much. Mabel twisted her hands together. I found her retching one morning. She made me promise not to tell anyone. The world tilted. When? Wesley's voice came out strangled. About 3 weeks ago, Your Grace. 3 weeks. The timeline aligned with perfect, devastating clarity. The storm. The night he had broken. The intimacy they had shared. Lydia was pregnant. With his child. And he had called it a mistake. Wesley stood abruptly, the chair scraping against the floor. Why, send for Clara Lambert, immediately. She's already here, Your Grace, downstairs in the drawing room. He found Clara waiting, her face composed but her eyes troubled. Is it true? Wesley demanded without preamble. Is Lydia pregnant? Clara's expression confirmed it before she spoke. Yes. I examined her 3 days ago. She's approximately 6 weeks along. 6 weeks. His child, growing inside a woman he had called adequate, convenient, an arrangement. Did she tell you she was leaving? Wesley's voice cracked slightly. No, but... Clara hesitated. She seemed resigned when I saw her last, as if she had made some difficult decision. What decision? I don't know, Your Grace. But if I may be frank, she seemed like a woman who had stopped hoping for anything better. The words struck him like physical blows. Stopped hoping. because he had taken hope from her, systematically, deliberately. He had given her one night of tenderness, then returned to cold indifference, had let Gabriella undermine her at every turn, had treated his own wife like a stranger while showing warmth to another woman, and when Lydia had needed him most, carrying his child, facing an uncertain future, he had called their intimacy a mistake. She must have heard. Somehow, she must have heard him speaking with Gabriella, heard him dismiss her, heard him reduce her to nothing more than a convenient arrangement, and rather than stay and endure further humiliation, she had chosen to leave, with nothing but her dignity and their child. "Find her," Westley said, his voice raw. "Send riders out in every direction. Check coaching inns, train stations, or anywhere she might have gone." "Your Grace, now." Clara nodded and left quickly. Westley stood alone in the drawing room, staring at walls that suddenly felt like a prison. He had lost her. Through his own stupidity, his own cowardice, his own inability to admit what he felt, he had driven away the one person who had actually mattered. The door opened. Gabriella swept in, elegant in morning blue, a smile on her face that died when she saw his expression. "Westley, darling, I heard there was some commotion." "Get out!" She blinked. "What?" "Get out of my house, now. You can't be serious." He turned to face her fully, and whatever she saw in his eyes made her take a step back. "You've been poisoned," he said quietly, "dripping your venom into my ear, undermining my wife. I was occupying space that was never yours to claim. I've been your closest friend for years. You've been using me, using our family's connection to maintain proximity, hoping I would eventually tire of duty and turn to you instead." His voice hardened. "But I was already married, Gabriella, and you made sure my wife knew exactly how little she mattered." "She doesn't matter, Westley. She's a Maxwell, practically bankrupt. You married her out of obligation. I married her because I was too much a coward to admit I wanted her." The words exploded from him, too afraid of appearing weak, too concerned with maintaining control. "So I told myself it was duty, told myself she was a convenient solution." He laughed bitterly. "And now she's gone, taking my child with her. Because I let you convince me that what we had was real, while I treated my actual wife like she was invisible." Gabriella's face paled. "Child? She's pregnant. Was pregnant when I spoke with you last night, when I called her adequate, when I agreed she was nothing more than an arrangement." Westley's voice dropped to something dangerous. "She heard us, Gabriella. She heard every word, and she left rather than stay with a man who valued her so little." "Westley, I didn't know. Get out. You're no longer welcome at Westwood. If I see you here again, I'll have you removed by force." "You're making a mistake." "No. Marrying Lydia wasn't the mistake. Treating her the way I did was the mistake. Listening to you was the mistake." He moved toward the door, holding it open. "Leave, now." Gabriella stared at him for a long moment, then swept past with rigid dignity. Her footsteps echoed down the hall. Westley closed the door and leaned against it, his hands shaking. He had to find Lydia, had to make this right somehow, if it wasn't already too late. 3 months had passed since Lydia walked away from Westwood Estate. She stood now in the small garden behind a cottage she rented in a village called Millbrook, 20 miles from anywhere the Duke of Westwood might think to search. The morning sun warmed her face, autumn giving way to early winter. Her hand rested on the gentle swell of her stomach, now visible beneath simple wool dresses. The baby moved sometimes, small flutters like butterflies trapped beneath her skin. Each movement reminded her why she had left, what she was protecting. Miss Lydia, Pearl Hampton, her landlady and the widow who owned the cottage, appeared at the back door. "There's a gentleman asking for you." Lydia's heart jumped. "What kind of gentleman?" "Claims to be from the magistrate's office. Something about unpaid debts." Not Westley, then. Lydia had been using her mother's maiden name, Lydia Kent, and had been careful to leave no trail. But the world had a way of finding you, no matter how carefully you hid. She went inside, where a thin man with sharp features waited in the small sitting room. "Miss Kent?" His eyes travelled over her, noting her condition. "I'm Edward Morris, representing certain creditors in London. There are outstanding debts under the name Lydia Maxwell. I have reason to believe you might be that person." Lydia's hands clenched. "I don't know what you're talking about." "Really? Or because I have documents here showing marriage records. Lydia Maxwell wed to Duke Westley Chandler. And yet you're here, calling yourself Kent, living in humble circumstances." His smile was not kind. "Fleeing your husband, perhaps? My personal affairs are none of your concern." "They become my concern when debts are involved. Your father's debts, to be precise. Debts that should have been resolved through your marriage settlement." "Those debts were paid." "Some were. Others remained outstanding. And according to law, a husband's responsibility becomes the wife's responsibility, becomes the husband's responsibility." He pulled out papers. "Unless the wife abandons the marriage, then matters become complicated." Lydia's chest tightened. "What do you want? Payment, or I'll be forced to notify the Duke of your whereabouts. I'm sure he would be very interested to know where his runaway Duchess has gone." This was extortion. Veiled in legal language, but extortion nonetheless. "I have no money." "No? Living here must cost something. And that's a nice cloak you're wearing. Surely you have something of value." Her mother's pearls, hidden in her room. The only thing of worth she possessed. "Leave," Lydia said quietly. "Now. I'll be back tomorrow, with authorities if necessary." Edward Morris tipped his hat mockingly. "Think carefully, Miss Kent. Or should I say, Your Grace?" He left, his threat hanging in the air like smoke. Pearl appeared from the kitchen, her round face troubled. "What are you going to do?" "I don't know." But she did know. She couldn't stay here. If this Morris could find her, others could too. And if word reached Westley. No, she would not go back to being a convenient arrangement, would not raise her child in that cold, empty estate where love was a weakness and warmth was rationed like precious stones. She would run again if necessary. That night, Lydia packed the few belongings she owned. Pearl watched from the doorway, sadness in her eyes. "You're leaving." "I have to." "Where will you go?" "I don't know. Somewhere he can't find me." Pearl was quiet for a moment. "This Duke, does he know about the baby?" "No." "Don't you think he deserves to know? It's his child, too." Lydia's hands stilled over the small bag. "He called me adequate, called our one night together a mistake. I was nothing to him but a solution to a problem." Her voice hardened. "I won't let my child grow up knowing their father sees them the same way." "What if you're wrong about him?" "I'm not." But doubt had begun to creep in during long, lonely nights. What if she had misunderstood? What if Westley's coldness had been fear rather than indifference? No. She had heard him clearly, had heard every dismissive word. Lydia finished packing and lay down to sleep, knowing she would leave at first light. But sleep would not come. She stood at the window, watching stars scattered across a black sky, her hand on her stomach. "I'm sorry," she whispered to the child growing inside her. "Sorry you won't know your father. Sorry this isn't the life I wanted for you. But I promise, I will love you enough for both of us." The baby fluttered in response. Lydia was about to turn from the window when movement caught her eye. A horse and rider approaching the cottage, tall, dark-haired, moving with purpose. Her breath stopped. No, it couldn't be. But she knew that silhouette, would know it anywhere. Westerly had found her. She stepped back from the window, heart racing. She could run out the back, disappear into the night before he reached the door. But something held her frozen. Hoofbeats stopped. A knock sounded downstairs, firm but not aggressive. Pearl's voice, muffled. "Can I help you?" "I'm looking for someone, a young woman. Dark hair, blue eyes. She would be expecting a child." Westley's voice, rough with exhaustion. "Please, I need to know if she's here." Silence. Lydia could imagine Pearl's face, protective and suspicious. "Why should I tell you anything?" "Because I'm her husband, and I've been searching for her for 3 months, but I just want to know if she's safe. The kind of husband who drives his wife away isn't one I'm inclined to help." A pause. Then Westley's voice, quieter. "You're right, I was a terrible husband, cold, distant, cruel without meaning to be." Another pause. "But she's carrying my child, and I need to know they're both safe. Even if she won't see me, even if she wants nothing to do with me, I just need to know." The raw honesty in his voice cracked something in Lydia's chest. She moved before she could think better of it. Down the narrow stairs, to the front door where Pearl stood blocking Westley's path. "It's all right, Pearl," Lydia said quietly. Both of them turned. Westley looked terrible. His hair was disheveled. Dark circles shadowed his eyes. His usually immaculate clothing was creased and dusty from travel. But his eyes held something she had never seen before. Desperation, remorse, fear, and something that looked almost like hope. "Lydia," he breathed. They stood there, frozen, the threshold between them feeling impossibly wide. Pearl looked between them, then nodded slowly. "I'll give you privacy. But I'll be right in the kitchen if you need me, Lydia." A warning, protection offered. "Thank you," Lydia said. Pearl disappeared, leaving them alone. "You look well," Westley said finally. "I'm managing." His eyes traveled to her stomach, to the obvious swell of pregnancy. Something crossed his face. Wonder, perhaps. Or grief. May I come in?" Lydia hesitated, then stepped aside. He entered the small cottage, looking enormous and out of place among simple furniture and plain walls. He turned to face her, maintaining careful distance. "I'm sorry," he said, "for everything, for the coldness, for making you feel unwanted, for calling you adequate and our night together a mistake." His voice cracked. "I was a coward. Afraid of admitting I wanted you. Afraid of appearing weak." "I heard you," Lydia said quietly. "That night, speaking with Gabriella, I heard every word." Westley's face went pale. "God. Lydia, I... You called me convenient. Said I was nothing more than an arrangement. And when she mocked me, you agreed." "No, I didn't agree. I avoided the truth." He took a step closer, then stopped when she stiffened. "I've been lying to everyone. To Gabriella. To myself. Most of all to you." "About what?" "About wanting you. About needing you." His hands clenched at his sides. "I married you because my family required it. Yes. But I chose you, Lydia. Out of all the women I could have married, I chose you. You never looked at me. Never spoke to me, barely acknowledged my existence. Because looking at you hurt, because every time I saw you, I wanted things I told myself I couldn't have. Warmth, connection, love. He laughed bitterly. I was so afraid of being vulnerable that I became cruel instead. That night during the storm was real. Everything I said to you was real. And then morning came and fear returned. So I retreated. Told myself it was weakness. Tried to pretend it hadn't mattered. His voice dropped. But it did matter. You matter. More than I knew how to admit. Lydia wrapped her arms around herself, protecting her heart and the child within. Pretty words, Westley. But words are easy. You had 3 months with me at Westwood, or 3 months to show me I mattered. I know, and I failed. Every single day I failed you. He took another careful step closer. But I'm here now. I'm telling you the truth now. And I'm begging you. Give me a chance to prove I've changed. Why should I? Because I love you. The words fell between them like stones into still water. Lydia's breath caught. You don't mean that. I do. I've loved you since the moment you walked into that godforsaken chapel and married me, despite knowing exactly what kind of man I was. I've loved you through every silent dinner, every missed opportunity, every moment I was too much a coward to tell you. He moved closer still. I love you, Lydia, and I love our child, and I will spend the rest of my life proving it if you'll let me. Tears burned in Lydia's eyes, but she refused to let them fall. Oh, you don't get to lose me and then decide I mattered. You're right, I don't get to decide anything, but I'm asking, begging, for a chance to earn what I should have treasured from the beginning. And Gabriella? Gone. Banished from the estate. From my life. His voice hardened. She was poison I allowed too close. That will never happen again. Lydia studied his face, searching for deception. Finding only naked honesty. I don't trust you, she said, finally. I know. I don't know if I can ever trust you. I understand. And I won't come back to Westwood, not as your convenient duchess, not as decoration. Then I won't take you back as that. He dropped to one knee before her, his eyes level with her stomach. I'm asking you to marry me again. Properly this time. As equals. As partners. His hand reached out, hovering near her stomach without touching. As the parents of this child who deserves better than what we've given them so far. Lydia's hands moved protectively to her stomach. What are you proposing? Come back with me. Not to the estate. We'll live elsewhere, if you prefer. Somewhere that's ours. Not weighed down by family history. He looked up at her. I'll court you properly. Prove to you every day that you matter. That you're chosen. That you're loved. I can't just forgive everything because you've had some revelation. I'm not asking you to forgive. I'm asking you to give me a chance to earn forgiveness, however long that takes. A knock at the door interrupted them. Pearl's voice, sharp with alarm. Lydia, there are men outside, with the magistrate. Lydia's chest tightened. Morris had brought authorities. Westley rose smoothly, his expression hardening. What men? Lydia explained quickly about the debt collector, the threats, the extortion. Westley's jaw clenched. Stay here. He strode to the door and threw it open. Outside, Edward Morris stood with two constables and an officious-looking man in formal robes. Your Grace, Morris said, his smile oily. How fortunate. I was just about to collect your wife for you. You'll do no such thing. Westley's voice carried absolute authority. Whatever debts you claim exist, they were settled in the marriage contract. If you have proof otherwise, present it to my solicitors in London. The law states that my wife is under my protection, and anyone attempting to harass or threaten her will answer to me personally. Westley's eyes were cold as winter. Boar, are we clear? The magistrate stepped forward. Your Grace, if the lady is indeed the Duchess of Westwood, then certain legalities must be. The Duchess is under my care. Any further legal matters will be handled through proper channels, not through midnight threats and extortion. Westley turned his gaze to Morris. If I see you near my wife again, I'll have you arrested for attempted kidnapping and fraud. This isn't over. It is. Leave. Now. The authority in his voice was absolute. The magistrate bowed slightly, backing away. Morris looked like he wanted to argue but thought better of it. They retreated to their horses and rode off into darkness. Westley returned inside, his shoulders tight with tension. I'll have my solicitors ensure you're not bothered again. By anyone. Lydia stared at him. This was the Duke she had married, or the one who commanded rooms and men with effortless authority. But he had used that power to protect her, not to control her, to protect her. Thank you, she said quietly. You're my wife. Protection is the least you deserve. He paused. Along with honesty, respect, love. Lydia sank into a chair, suddenly exhausted. The baby moved, responding to her stress. Westley noticed. Are you well? Should I send for a physician? I'm fine, just tired. He knelt beside her chair, careful not to touch without permission. Let me take care of you, both of you, please. Lydia looked at him, really looked at him, saw the fear and hope warring in his eyes, saw the exhaustion that spoke of weeks spent searching, saw genuine remorse carved into every line of his face. I can't promise to forgive you, she said finally. Not yet, or maybe not for a long time. I don't expect you to. But, she took a shaky breath. I'm tired of running, and our child deserves a father, even one who has to earn the right to that title. Something like joy flashed across his face. Does that mean? It means you can stay. Court me properly, as you said. Prove you've changed. Her voice hardened. But if you hurt me again, Westley, if you make me feel invisible or inadequate or less than, I will leave, and I won't come back. I understand. Do you? Because I'm not the desperate girl who married you 3 months ago. I've learned I can survive alone. That I'm stronger than I thought. I know. I can see it. He reached out slowly, giving her time to pull away. When she didn't, his hand covered hers gently. You're magnificent, Lydia. I was too blind to see it before. But I see it now. His hand was warm against hers, solid, real. We'll take this slowly, Lydia said. No grand gestures, no rushing back into anything, just one day at a time. Whatever you need, whatever timeline you require. She studied their joined hands. So much damage between them. So many wounds that would take time to heal. But beneath the hurt, beneath the betrayal, something fragile remained. A possibility. Not of the marriage they'd had, but of the marriage they might build. If he truly meant what he said. If he could prove it through actions, not just words. There's a room upstairs, Pearl said from the kitchen doorway. His Grace can stay there tonight. But I'm putting you in the room with the lock, Lydia. Just to be safe. Westley smiled slightly. Thank you. I appreciate you protecting her. Someone needs to, Pearl said pointedly. You're right. And from now on, that someone will be me. That night, Lydia lay in the small room with the lock, her hand on her stomach. Below, she could hear Westley speaking quietly with Pearl, his voice carrying none of its usual aristocratic detachment. He sounded almost humble. Time would tell if he meant it, if this change was real or just another performance. But for the first time in months, Lydia felt something other than loneliness, not happiness. Not yet. But possibility. The baby fluttered beneath her hand, as if approving. "We'll see," she whispered. "We'll take our time and see." Outside, winter wind whispered through bare trees. Inside, warmth from the fireplace pushed back the cold. And somewhere between those two extremes, cold distance and cautious warmth, Lydia and Westley began the difficult work of building something real. Not the marriage they'd had, but the marriage they might earn. Together. 6 months later, spring arrived with gentle rain and new growth. Lydia stood in the garden of a modest estate 30 miles from Westwood. Not grand like the Duke's ancestral home, but comfortable. Theirs. A fresh start. In her arms, she held their daughter, 3 months old, with Westley's dark hair and Lydia's blue eyes. Clara, they had named her, after the physician's wife, who had shown Lydia kindness when kindness was rare. Westley appeared at the door, his jacket discarded, his sleeves rolled up. He had been working in his study, managing estate business from their new home rather than the cold halls of Westwood. "There are my girls," he said softly, approaching them with the careful reverence he always showed now. He had kept his promise. Every day for 6 months, he had proven himself. Through patience when Lydia was angry, through gentleness when she was afraid, through unwavering dedication to both her and their daughter. He had courted her slowly, brought her flowers from the garden, read to her in the evenings, held her when nightmares came, attended the birth and wept when he first held his daughter. He had earned his way back into her heart, not through grand gestures, but through 1,000 small acts of devotion. "She's been fussy," Lydia said, passing Clara to him. "I think she missed you." Westley cradled their daughter with practiced ease, pressing a kiss to her dark curls. "Impossible. I was only gone an hour." "An hour is a lifetime to her." He looked at Lydia over their daughter's head, his eyes warm. "How are you feeling?" "Good. Tired, but good." "You should rest. I'll watch her." "You have work. It can wait. You're more important." He said it so easily now, as if it were the simplest truth in the world. And perhaps it was. Lydia moved to his side, leaning against him, as they both watched their daughter yawn and settle into sleep. "Do you ever regret it?" Westley asked quietly. "Giving me another chance." Lydia considered the question honestly. There were still moments of doubt, still nights when old hurts surfaced, still careful guardedness around her heart. But there were also moments like this, quiet family moments that felt like coming home. "Ask me again in 20 years, she said finally. Westley laughed softly. "Fair enough." He pressed a kiss to her temple. "I love you, Lydia, in case I haven't said it today." "You said it this morning, and at breakfast. And when you brought me tea this afternoon." "I may have a problem." "You do, but it's one I'm learning to live with." She tilted her face up, and he kissed her. Gentle, reverent, full of promises he now kept. When they broke apart, Clara stirred between them, making soft baby sounds. "She's perfect," Westley whispered. "She is." "Thank you for giving me this, giving us this." Lydia looked at the man who had once called her adequate and an arrangement, who had hurt her deeply through coldness and neglect, but who had also traveled across the country to find her, who had dropped to his knees and begged for a chance, who had spent 6 months proving that love was not weakness, but strength. "Thank you for earning it," she said. And in that moment, surrounded by spring rain and new growth and their sleeping daughter, Lydia understood something fundamental. She had not been rescued by a duke, she had rescued herself, and in doing so, she had shown him how to be saved too. Their marriage had not been a fairy tale, but it had become something real. something earned, something chosen, every single day. And that was better than any fairy tale could ever be.